Welcome to the Book of Mormon podcast. My name's Kyle, and I'm just a guy who really enjoys reading the Book of Mormon. As we journey through the text together, I'll do my best to help you stay on top of all the characters and storylines that are going on. But if you have any doctrinal or historical questions, you can get those answered in real time by reaching out on mormon.org/chat. Okay, 2 Nephi chapters 11 and 12. Here we are getting into a very long Isaiah quotation. It starts in chapter 12 and goes through chapter 24. That's a very long stretch Nephi gives us. Chapter 11, first, he introduces it a little bit, so we'll start right there. Verse 1. And now Jacob spake many more things to my people at that time. Nevertheless, only these things have I caused to be written, for the things which I have written sufficeth me. So that's Nephi just capping up. The last several chapters have been his little brother Jacob preaching at us. Nephi's taking back over. Verse 2. And now I, Nephi, write more of the words of Isaiah, for my soul delighteth in his words. For I will liken his words unto my people, and I will send them forth unto all my children, for he verily saw my Redeemer, even as I have seen him. And my brother Jacob also has seen him, as I have seen him. Wherefore I will send their words forth unto my children to prove unto them that my words are true. Wherefore, by the words of three God hath said, I will establish my word. Nevertheless, God sendeth more witnesses, and he proveth all his words. Behold, my soul delighteth in proving unto my people the truth of the coming of Christ. For this end hath the law of Moses been given. And all things which have been given of God from the beginning of the world unto man are the typifying of him. So this is actually really interesting to me. It, near as I can tell, all through the Old Testament and even in the New Testament, once Jesus came, the children of Israel did not realize that the law of Moses was a symbol of the coming Messiah, or at least it didn't help them recognize him when he came. And yet, we modern Christians look back and we're like, oh, obviously sacrifice is a symbol of the suffering and death of Jesus Christ. Obviously, you know, firstborn sheep is killed because, and you know, it seems obvious to us now, but it was not clear to anyone at the time, except apparently to the descendants of Lehi. Nephi and his crew here in the New World, at least Nephi and Jacob really get it, which makes sense since apparently they've seen Jesus. Nephi just said he's seen his Redeemer. And now he just loves to prove to his people as much as he can that Jesus is coming. And Isaiah apparently is the best way to do that in the Old Testament. Verse 5. And also my soul delighteth in the covenants of the Lord which he hath made to our fathers. Yea, my soul delighteth in his grace and in his justice and power and mercy in the great and eternal plan of deliverance from death. And my soul delighteth in proving unto my people that save Christ should come, all men must perish. For if there be no Christ, there be no God. And if there be no God, we are not, for there could have been no creation. But there is a God, and he is Christ, and he cometh in the fullness of his own time. So here again, this is pretty intelligent of Nephi. He really seems to get it that Christ, the coming Messiah, the Redeemer, who the children of Israel did believe would come eventually, Nephi understands he is God. He is Jehovah, which I don't think anyone at that time, and even a lot of people today, really understand. But Nephi, clear back hundreds of years before Christ came, understood this stuff. He's a mighty prophet, and I'm excited for him to guide us through Isaiah, which he starts in the final verse here, verse 8. And now I write some of the words of Isaiah, that whoso of my people shall see these words may lift up their hearts and rejoice for all men. Now these are the words, and ye may liken them unto you and unto all men. So let's dive right into chapter 12, verse 1. The word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall come to pass in the last days, when the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. And many people shall go and say, Come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. So Isaiah says he's prophesying here of the last days, some future time when people will be gathering and eager to hear the word of the Lord, and there won't be war anymore. Verse 5. O house of Jacob, come ye and let us walk in the light of the Lord. Yea, come, for ye have all gone astray, every one to his wicked ways. Here Isaiah is transitioning. He's going to stop his prophesying of this beautiful, peaceful future and start chastising the people of Israel for not following the Lord. Verse 6. Therefore, O Lord, thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east, and hearken unto soothsayers like the Philistines, and they please themselves in the children of strangers. Their land also is full of silver and gold, neither is there any end of their treasures. Their land is also full of horses, neither is there any end of their chariots. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And the mean man boweth not down, and the great man humbleth himself not. Therefore, forgive him not. O ye wicked ones, enter into the rock, and hide thee in the dust, for the fear of the Lord and the glory of his majesty shall smite thee. And it shall come to pass that the lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of the Lord of hosts soon cometh upon all nations, yea, upon everyone, yea, upon the proud and the lofty, and upon everyone who is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. Yea, and the day of the Lord shall come upon all the cedars of Lebanon, for they are high and lifted up, and upon all the oaks of Bashan, and upon all the high mountains, and upon all the hills, and upon all the nations which are lifted up, and upon every people, and upon every high tower, and upon every fenced wall, and upon all the ships of the sea, and upon all the ships of Tarshish, and upon all pleasant pictures. So, nowhere to hide when the day of the Lord comes, and when all the prideful, haughty people are smitten, there's going to be no escape. Verse 17, and the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day, and the idols he shall utterly abolish. And they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth, for the fear of the Lord shall come upon them, and the glory of his majesty shall smite them when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which he hath made for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks, for the fear of the Lord shall come upon them, and the majesty of his glory shall smite them when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? So that's some exciting, cheery imagery. Lots of destruction coming, and that is going to continue in the next chapter,